It's great to be here and get to see a lot of friends here. Mr. Hunter.
I don't have my laser pointer. Does anybody have a laser pointer? You have the stick.
That's okay.
Continuing.
All right, so what I wanted to talk about today is linking leptogenesis to neutrino oscillation. And the answer to this question, whether it is possible, in a model-independent way, the answer is no, as I will show. But once we have a specific model, which are well-motivated by such as grain unification, then it is possible to make such connection. All right, so in the standard model, as we all know, there's only one source of CP violation, namely the complex phase in the CK matrix. It is well known that with this complex CP phase in the CK matrix, it is not sufficient to explain the observed asymmetry between the matter and antimatter that has been observed. Which one? All right, let's go.
Yeah, you can flip pages if you want.
Oh, no, that's okay. Thank you. All right, so the effects of the CP phase in the CK matrix can be estimated naively as follows. Namely, its effects is parameterized by this parameter, what we call delta CP. And since if any of the two quarks, if they have degenerate masses in the standard model, there's no CP violation. So the effects of this delta CP can then be parameterized as this product of the square mass differences among the quarks. While this proportionality constant J is the Yaskiel invariant. All right. So as it turns out, the effect of CP violation from the CK phase gives rise to a delta CP, which is around 10 to the power minus 20. And this, in turn, gives rise to a baryonic asymmetry, which is 18 orders of magnitude smaller compared to the observed value, which is roughly of the order of 10 to the power minus 10. So of course, there are various mechanisms to generate baryogenesis. And the first realization of all the three Sakharov conditions is based on grain unified theory. So first of all, in grain unified theory, since quarks and leptons, they are unified within one multiplate under the gas symmetry, baryon number violation is unavoidable. All right, so this satisfies the first condition. And secondly, since there are additional sources of CP violation, it is not too hard to get sufficient amount of CP violation from gut symmetry, or from gut model. And certainly, because the time scale of heavy particle decays is much smaller, much slower, compared to the expansion rate of the universe, the other equilibrium decays of these heavy particles exist. I mean, this is intrinsically out of equilibrium for the decays of a heavy particle in gut theory. But the problem with gut baryogenesis is that in order to get sufficient amount of baryogenesis, it requires a high reheating temperature, and this then leads to gravitational overproduction. All right. So of course, there's also the electroweak baryogenesis, where, for example, MSSM is one of the examples where there exists additional sources of CP violation. But in this case, in order to get strong first-order phase transition, the Higgs mass is required to be smaller than 120 GeV, and this in turn requires a fine-tuning of the stop mass. All right. So of course, the observation of neutrino oscillations opens up any possibility, namely the leptogenesis, and this will be the subject of this talk.
So it's yes. Explicitly non-Susy.
What do you mean?
Well, if you go back, the MH less than 120 GeV.
This is for MSSM.
Yes,
this is specifically for MSSM. And the bound from non-Susy case is much smaller.
Right.
I think it's like 70 GeV.
Right.
So this number quoted here, that's for MSSM.
So does that mean the rest of your talk is in that context? Or?
No, this is baryogenesis. But
yeah.
I'm just saying there are problems with the conventional baryogenesis mechanism.
Okay.
And now I'm talking about a different possibility, namely the leptogenesis.
Okay.
All right? So I'm just trying to compare these different scenarios. All right, so of course, now we have very compelling evidence of neutrino oscillation. This comes from this exists in the atmospheric This has been observed in the atmospheric neutrinos, the solar neutrinos, and also the terrestrial experiments. So in atmospheric neutrino, the dominant oscillation channel is nu mu into nu tau, while the solar neutrino, the dominant oscillation channel is nu e going into either nu mu or nu tau. So this result, this observation, combined with the negative result from miniboom, indicate a picture with three neutrino oscillations. And this oscillation is described by this mixing matrix U, ULJ. So once neutrinos have masses, of course, there could be a mismatch between their weak interaction eigenstates, namely the eigenstate that participate in the weak interaction, and their mass eigenstates. And this mismatch is described by the so-called PMNS matrix, which is parameterized by three mixing angles that can be probed at the atmospheric neutrino experiment, reactor experiment, and solar experiment. And the PMNS matrix also has three phases if neutrinos are Majorana particles. This include a direct CP violating phase delta, which is this phase, and the two Majorana phases, alpha 21 and alpha 31. Right? So if neutrinos are direct particle, then the Majorana phases vanish. So the transition probability of neutrino going from the flavor A into flavor B is determined by the relevant mixing angle, sin squared 2 theta, and the relevant delta m squared. So far, we have a really good knowledge about all these oscillation parameters. The most up-to-date global fit to various neutrino oscillation data indicate the following Bessel value and two sigma limits. So for the atmospheric mixing angle, this indicate this is the Bessel value is maximal, while in the parentheses, I quoted the two sigma limit. Right? While for theta 1-3, the Bessel value is zero, while the two sigma limit for sine squared theta 1-3 is, the upper limit is 0.028. While for the solar mixing angle, the Bessel value for sine squared theta solar is 0.3, and this is the two sigma limit. And for delta in atmospheric square, this is roughly 10 to the power minus 3 electron volt square. And for the solar delta m square, this is of the order of 10 to the power minus 5 electron volt square. And I would also like to point it out, there's a recent result, a recent hint for non-zero theta 1-3. And this is from the Bari group that just came out early this summer, which indicate a Bessel value for sine squared theta 1-3 to be 0.016. Okay, so what I would like to bring to your attention is all these Bessel values from the experiments are very close to the so-called tri-bimaximal mixing prediction. So the tri-bimaximal neutrino mixing matrix is described by this very special form, which has a special property that the second column, all the elements in the second column are equal. They are all equals to 1 over square root 3. So this mixing matrix predicts exactly maximal atmospheric mixing angle. And for theta 1-3, its prediction is exactly zero. While for the solar mixing, sine squared theta solar, the prediction is exactly absurd. Okay, so I will come back to this point later. All right. So of course, in view of the In view of the global fit data, this, if we write in terms of tangent squared theta solar, this prediction of, let's see, a half is quite different from the Bessel value from the experimental side. But in view of the new common result that came out earlier this year, now this new result from the experimental side is getting closer to the tri-bimaximal prediction. So I'll come back to this point because there have been a lot of activities trying to construct this neutrino mixing matrix from the finite group family symmetry. And there's, and of course, since here, it predicts a vanishing theta 1-3, a very, I mean, the first question you would ask is...
You have to build NOVA.
What is it?
You have to build NOVA.
right. But I mean, in connection to lithogenesis, is since theta 1-3 vanish, then the JCP will vanish in the lepton sector, and whether lithogenesis is possible or not. Yes. I will show you. So when this guy, this British gentleman, proposed this form, it is just ad hoc. I mean, they just put it by hand. And later, serious model builders try to build up models which give rise to this mixed matrix. And I will show you a specific example where this matrix arises as Koch-Gordan coefficients of some tetrahedral group theory. So it is a very robust prediction because there's no adjustable parameters which tell you the mixing angle has to be this. I mean, this mixing angle just come about from group theory. So I'll give you a specific example later. But now get back to lithogenesis. So the bottom line is, for many oscillation parameters, we already enter from discovery phase into precision phase. Alright, so of course there are also searches for absolute mass scale of the neutrinos. From the endpoint kinematic of tritium decay, we have an upper bound roughly of order of 2 electron volts. And Ketri has a plan of increase the sensitivity one order of magnitude, 2.2 electron volts. And from cosmology, we know some of the three absolute masses of the neutrinos has to be smaller than 1 electron volt. And from neutrinoless double beta decay, we also have a bound on the matrix elements to be smaller than about 0.2 electron volts. So it depends on who you talk to, this bound could be different. And there are, of course, also various known unknowns. First of all, what is the size of theta 1-3? And this translates into the physical question, namely, what is the nu e component, this flavored component nu e, in this heaviest eigenstate, in the mass eigenstate nu 3. And secondly, whether theta 2-3 is exactly maximal pi over 4, or does it deviate from pi over 4? And of course, this translates into the question, what is the nu mu and nu tau components in various mass eigenstates? Right, so if it is exactly pi over 4, then that would strongly indicate there's an underlying symmetry. And thirdly, what is the neutrino mass hierarchy? Whether this normal mass hierarchical pattern, namely nu 3, which is again defined by this flavor composition, is the heaviest eigenstate, or the inverted hierarchy case, namely nu 3 is the lightest mass eigenstate. And thirdly, whether there's CP violation in neutrino oscillation or not. Of course, this is relevant to answer the question why we exist. Right? So a natural way to generate small neutrino masses is a seesaw mechanism. And it also gives rise to the possibility of linking the origin of the baryon number symmetry to neutrino oscillation through lithogenesis. So this is nice. So to implement seesaw mechanism, we first of all introduce right-handed neutrinos, which are standard model gauge singlets. And since right-handed neutrinos are standard model gauge singlets, we are now allowed to write down a Majorana mass term just for the right-handed neutrinos. And also, we are allowed to write a Dirac mass term for the neutrinos, just like we do for all the other for all the charged fermions. So once we get the we have the right-handed Majorana mass term for the neutrinos, we generate this entry in the 2x2 seesaw matrix. And this off-diagonal matrix elements are the direct mass term. So once we integrate out the heavy neutrino, the effective neutrino mass matrix would have a light mass eigenstate, which is of the order of the M Dirac times the suppression factor, namely the ratio of M Dirac to MR. So, and also there's a heavy mass eigenstate, which is roughly MR. So to get an effective light neutrino mass of the order compatible to the observation of, say, square root of delta M atmospheric square, which is roughly 0.05 electron volts, and if we put in M Dirac, roughly of the order of M top, as it turns out, MR is roughly of the order of the grain unification scale, which is 10 to the power 16 GeV. So once we have seesaw mechanism, that means neutrinos are Majorana fermions, and that imply Lipton number violation. All right. So the standard lithogenesis is implemented in the context of seesaw mechanism. And the basic idea is that due to the out of equilibrium decays of the right-handed neutrinos into a lepton doublet and a conjugate Higgs, this produces a primordial lepton number asymmetry. So to get non-vanishing asymmetry, we need to go to one loop label, and this asymmetry is due to the interference of this tree-level diagram with the one-loop diagram. And it is given as a ratio of the difference of this decay rates of the conjugate processes to the sum of the decay rates of these conjugate processes. All right, so once we generate this primordial lepton number asymmetry, then the electroweak spheron effects then convert the lepton asymmetry into baryonic asymmetry. And the final symmetry is then given by this form, namely 10 to the power minus 2 times this asymmetry epsilon times this kappa factor, which is so-called efficient factor that take into account all the washout effects due to the inverse decay and scattering processes, where this factor of 10 to the power minus 2 take into account the conversion factor. All right. So that is how the standard lithogenesis work in the presence of hierarchical right-handed neutrino mass spectrum. Of course, if there's SU2 triplet Higgs, there could be something called the type 2, which gives us the possibility of having the type 2 seesaw mechanism, then the prediction of lithogenesis could be a little bit different. And I will also have an example of that later. And of course, there's also something called resonant leptogenesis, meaning if this this Ni and Nj, these two right-handed neutrinos, they have near degenerate masses, then that could give rise to a large enhancement in the asymmetry, and this so-called the resonant leptogenesis. And there's also something called soft leptogenesis, which make use of these soft Susi breaking phases. So in this case, the asymmetry arises not due to the decay, but due to the oscillation. So this is very similar to KK bar oscillation for soft lithogenesis. And there's also something called direct lithogenesis. So I'm not going through this alternatives, but I'll just concentrate on the standard lithogenesis and the type 2 lithogenesis and see how one may or may not make the connection between lithogenesis and neutrino oscillations. Any questions up to now? All right, so finally we show these three Sakharov conditions. So of course, now we have the evidence of expanding universe. This, of course, confirmed the out of equilibrium nature of the decay. And secondly, the second condition, namely the lepton number violation, this can be tested at the neutrinoless double beta decay. All right, so in order to further support the idea of leptogenesis, we need to observe the low energy CP violation.
So how far away is the neutrinoless double beta decay experimental results from the level needed? I mean, nothing has been seen yet. I mean, how much further down do you have to go before ruling out leptogenesis?
Right, so I think that could translate into what are the model predictions.
Right.
Typical model predictions.
Yeah.
In order to have observable rate, generally you require inverted mass hierarchy. That's right. But I will show you an example which also related to this tri-bimaximal neutrino mixing matrix. Most of the model predict quite large, they give rise to quite large prediction for neutrinoless double beta decay.
And so that sort of preferred model is how far below current limits?
I think the prediction there is about one order of magnitude. No, that's a typical gap prediction, but I would have a graph which show you the entire region.
How soon will we improve the cumulus double beta decay by 2 orders of magnitude?
You'll be retired.
Well, I know that's true for me. There's
a minor on it for every sex level. Both of them have, in this next phase, you're going to want to do one order, and then both of them have plans. So we're probably looking at least 5 to 6 years. Assuming they work.
Right, but I mean, this particular type of models I have in mind, which has, I mean, that's most of the model building efforts has gone into in the past few years, they do predict quite large neutrinoless double beta decay. And I'll just show you a plot later. Okay, so to answer this question, whether it is possible to make the connection, let's first of all just count the number parameters. So at high energy, in the presence of right-handed neutrinos, this is the Lagrangian we can write down. So the first line here are just a kind of term for the Dalton doublets, the right-handed electron, and the right-handed neutrinos. While the second line here are the Yukawa couplings of the charged leptons and the neutrinos. And this is the third term, this is the Majorana mass term for the neutrinos. So without loss of generality, we can rotate to a basis where Fij, namely the Yukawa coupling for the charged leptons and the right-handed neutrino mass matrix, are diagonal. Okay, so in this basis, the Yukawa coupling Hij for the neutrino is a general complex matrix. So for three families, Hij is a 3x3 general complex matrix, which has 18 or 9 complex parameters. Namely, it would have 9 complex faces. And out of these 9 faces, 3 of them can be absorbed into a field redefinition of the electron doublet. So there are only 6 physical faces at high energy. And for a general 3x3 real matrix, it can be diagonalized by a biunitary transformation, which contains 6 mixing angles. All right, so in high energy, totally, there are 6 physical faces and 6 mixing angles. So now let's integrate out the right-handed neutrino and get this low-energy effective Lagrangian, where, again, this is the lepton, charged lepton Yukawas, and this is the effective neutrino. This term gives rise to effective neutrino Majorana masses for the light neutrinos. Okay, so in the basis where Fij, which is the Yukawa coupling for the charged leptons, is diagonal, this Majorana mass term for the neutrino, the light neutrino, Hij, is symmetric and in general complex. Right, so for a complex symmetric matrix, it is parameterized by 6 phases. But once again, 3 of the 6 phases can be absorbed into a field redefinition of the lepton doublet. And therefore, we are left with only 3 physical phases at low energy. And for a real symmetric matrix, it can be diagonalized by orthogonal transformation, which is parameterized by 3 mixing angles. So at low energy, we have 3 physical phases and 3 mixing angles. So this shows you clearly, going from high energy down to low energy, the number of parameters is reduced by half. And what that means is we have 3 additional mixing angles and 3 additional phases at high energy, which we don't have any control of with low energy data. And due to this reason, in a model-independent way, there's no way to make connection between the two sectors. So to see this more explicitly, we can make use of the so-called orthogonal parametrization, or sometimes it is called Kasa-Ibarra parametrization. Again, this is written in the basis, diagonal basis, for charged lepton and right-handed neutrino mass matrices. So in this basis, the neutrino-direct Yukawa interaction can be parametrized by this form. All right, so this is the right-handed rotation, and this is the left-handed rotation, and H1, H2, H3 are the 3 eigenvalues. All right, so, okay. So the combination, the low energy combination that is relevant for leptogenesis is this HH dagger times the Higgs VAP square. So basically, this is a combination after coming out of this asymmetry. All right. So in the circle one flavor approximation, namely if we just treat all the three flavors identically, this is the relevant combination for leptogenesis, which is parameterized. I mean, which you can just carry out the algebra, and it is given in terms of this capital M, which is the mass eigenvalues of the three heavy neutrinos, and this R, this orthogonal matrix R, which parameterize all the high energy phases in the right-hand sector, and this little m, which is the mass eigenvalue of the light neutrino masses, and again, this R dagger describes the high energy phase and m a half. So the bottom line here is that this combination that is relevant for leptogenesis, it depends only on the high energy phase R, but not the low energy m and s matrix. And this is in the one flavor approximation. What that means is, all right. So what that means is the following. So suppose we have a hierarchical right-handed neutrino mass pattern, namely the third, the heaviest, so M3 greater than, much greater than M2, much greater than M1. These are the heavy neutrino masses. If leptogenesis occur at the energy scale, which is about 10 to the power 12 GeV, right, then all the three Yukawa couplings for electron, muon, and tau are all out of equilibrium. They are all small and out of equilibrium. So in this case, we can just treat the three flavors equally. So what people usually do, so what that means is we could just sum over all the lepton number symmetry that is associated with the three lepton finals, the final state of three different leptons. So remember, we have the lightest right-handed neutrino decays into a conjugate Higgs and lepton doublet of flavor alpha. So this would produce, so the term of the three-level diagram with a one-loop diagram produces the asymmetry, which is associated with flavor alpha. And alpha, of course, from electron, muon, and tau. So if we treat all the three flavors equally, then we just sum over all this asymmetry and then evolve them using the same Boltzmann equation. And that's how we get this combination of HH dagger, right? Which depends on this R matrix only. So what this implies is, since there's no dependence on the analysis matrix, what that implies is, in this one flavor approximation, the presence of low energy leptonic CP violation doesn't imply non-zero leptogenesis. And conversely, if we don't observe any CP violation in neutrino oscillation, there is still possibility of getting non-zero leptogenesis just due to this R phase. So this is one flavor approximation. So there's no model independent connection that can exist. Any questions up to this point?
You're saying it's metaphysics.
What is it?
You're saying it's metaphysics.
What do you mean by
untestable?
It is untestable, right. Exactly. But the story changed once we include the flavor effects. So it was pointed out by this group of people very recently, if leptogenesis occur at energy scale, which is below 10 to 12 GeV, then these three flavors could be distinguishable. All right, and notice that the equilibrium temperature is given by the Yukawa coupling square times M Planck. And if the three flavors are distinguishable, then there could be non-universal washout effects. So the crucial point is, if we just look at this individual lepton asymmetry, it depends on both the R matrix which is the high energy matrix, and the U matrix, which basically is just imminence matrix. And it is only after we sum over all the three flavors, we get rid of, we lose the U dependence. Yes? So if, all right, so that's the main point. Okay, so explicitly, if, say, lithogenesis occur at 10 to the power 12 GeV, then this tau Yukawa coupling is in equilibrium, while the electron and muon Yukawa couplings are not. All right? While if lithogenesis occur at 10 to the power 9 GeV, then both the tau Yukawa and muon Yukawa are in equilibrium, while the electron Yukawa is not. So between the scale 10 to the power 9 to 10 to the power 12 GeV, we are in a two-flavor regime, where the tau Yukawa is, distinguishable from electron and muon Yukawas. So we have to evolve the asymmetry associated with this final flavor tau from those, namely the sum of the electron and muon Yukawas. So this is in the two flavor regimes. And if lithogenesis occur below 10 to the power 9, then all the three Yukawa couplings are distinguishable, and we are then in the three flavor regimes, and therefore we have to evolve the three asymmetries independently. So barring cancellation or fine-tuned cancellation, the leftover or the final asymmetry associated with each flavor in the three flavor regimes should still have the R dependence. All right, so in this case, in order to get non-zero lithogenesis, would require non-zero low energy CP violation. So just to show you numerically, so earlier, very recently, pointed out by Petkov and company, if we include the flavor effects for inverted mass hierarchy spectrum, the low energy CP phases can be important under certain conditions. So on the plot shown on the left is for the normal hierarchical pattern. And what's plotted here, the y-axis is the amount of baryon asymmetry, the epsilon value. And the x-axis here is the one to the elements of this R matrix. And the green curve denotes the low the contribution from low energy phases. And the blue curve is the contribution from the R matrix. So this is the from the high energy phase, and their sum is given by this red curve. So once again, as you can see, there's cancellation occur. So what that means is the contribution from the U matrix and the R matrix, they have opposite sign, and that's where the cancellation comes from.
T was assumed here?
10 to the power 11 GeV. This is a two-flavor regime. All right, so this is a normal hierarchy case. Well, for the inverted hierarchical case, namely M3 is the nu3 is the lattice eigenstate. With this choice of parameter, so what they do is they turn off the Dirac CP phase, but they make the Majorana phase maximal. All right, so in this case, as you can see, the contribution from R matrix is negligible. While the low energy phase, which is given by this green curve, is actually on top of the red curve. So basically, this just tells you how important the low energy phases are for this particular case.
So the net result is that blue line.
So the blue line is the contribution from the high energy phase, and the green line, which you cannot see, basically overlap the red curve. That's from the low energy phase. And the net result is a sum of the green curve and the blue curve, which is this red curve.
Okay, I was reading the caption down there, so
the caption?
You say the total is the red?
Yes, the total is the red. So basically the green and the red are equal, right? Because the blue is basically zero.
I was just flipping things in the line, never mind.
Right, so for this inverted hierarchical case, the low energy phases are extremely important. Okay, so that's the model independent statement, namely generally, without including flavor effects, there's no connection at all. But once you start including flavor effects, and of course, that's not arbitrary choice, right? It depends on where leptogenesis occurs. Once flavor effects start to click in order to get non-zero leptogenesis, usually, I mean, it would require non-zero low-energy CP violation. Okay, so now let's move on to specific model, where I would like to show you. In specific model...
Is there any other handle on that?
Handle on...
energy scale other than this? Is there anything in cosmology that this is the only way to approach that?
Do you mean how do we fix the scale of leptogenesis? So here, the scale is fixed by the requirement of generating sufficient leptogenesis.
I mean experimentally.
Experimentally, not that I know of. Because I mean, these are the right-handed neutrino masses. But of course, there's indirect way to probe it, namely using the low-energy neutrino masses. Because I mean, once you have a model, the effective light neutrino masses, of course, depends on how heavy the right-handed neutrino masses are. So that would be an indirect probe. But I don't know if...
Is there any footprint of the leptogenesis scale on the early universe that would be observable today?
I don't know the answer to that. That's all right. So a specific model. So first, there are, in order to make... I mean, the leptogenesis business come about because of neutrino masses. So, of course, many of the neutrino mass model, they have additional symmetries or textures. And what the symmetries and textures do is to reduce the number of parameters in the Yukawa sector. And once we reduce the number of parameters, it is possible that the connection can be made. So, for the class of models which based on texture assumptions, the specific one I would mention is a so-called 2x3 CISO model, and there's also theoretical motivation to consider this 2x3 CISO model. And another type of model I will discuss is models based on spontaneous CP violation. So it is very robust, because in this case, all the CP violation can come from a single source. So if that's the case, then to have leptogenesis, then we require non-zero CP violation. And that would imply CP violation at low energy, such as neutrino oscillation. All right? And then at the very end, as I advertised, this trapped by maximal neutrino mixing coming from a finite group family symmetry, they would also have interesting implication for leptogenesis. Okay, so CISO with two right-handed neutrinos. So to get the so-called 2x3 CISO, of course, there are only... two right-handed neutrinos. That's why it is of the 2x3 form. So the existence of two right-handed neutrinos are motivated from the cancellation of Witten anomaly. So basically, right. And so with two right-handed neutrinos, the Majorana mass term is given by this form. All right, it is 2x2. And what this group of people, they did is to assume this texture for the Dirac Yukawa matrix in the basis where the right-handed neutrino mass matrix is diagonal. So once we integrate out the heavy neutrino, this is the effective light neutrino mass matrix, which is parameterized by three real parameters, A, B, and B prime, and one phase delta.
Can you just remind me what the Witten anomaly is?
I think that's a global anomaly associated with a SU2 horizontal symmetry.
So if you have three right-handed neutrinos, you have an anomaly, is that what you're saying?
But this is a global.
If you have three doublets, it has that what? The patentable advantages.
So you don't.
So you need an even number of developments.
Yeah.
For an SQL gate.
All right. Okay, so what they found is, if there's a relation between these two parameters, a and a prime, which is related by this factor of square root 2, and if the parameter b and b prime are the same, then one can generate realistic mixing angles in masses for the light neutrinos. Of course, they have one massless state. All right, so what's special about this case is they could have a relation between the sign of the baryonic asymmetry and the sign of low-energy CP violation in neutrino oscillation. And this is completely due to the fact that there are only two right-handed neutrinos, so the number of parameters in the model between low and is much smaller compared to the most general case. So that's the model based on texture. Of course, there are realization trying to manifest that texture using an underlying family symmetry. Okay? So what are the sources of CP violation? So there are various manifestations of CP violation. It is CP violation is manifest in some of the weak scale observable, such as this has been observed in the kaon sector, B meson sector, and hopefully in the neutrino oscillation as well. And it also appear in the cosmological baryon number asymmetry. Also, there is the strong CP problem. So one question one may ask is whether all the CP violation can come from a single origin. So there are two types, from model point of view, CP violation can arise. One is through so-called explicit CP violation, namely the Yukawa couplings are complex. So you just explicitly break CP. Or it can arise spontaneously, namely it's through the complex phase in the expectation value of the scalar fields, while all the Yukawa couplings are real. So what we realized long ago, in the minimum Lebrun model, there are only two fundamental phases. So what is the minimum Lebrun model? It is a minimal extension of the standard model based on the gauge group SU2 left cross SU2 right cross U1B minus L. And there is a parity symmetry that interchange these two SU2. Okay, and the particle contents of minimal Lebrun model is the following. So here we have the usual quark doublets, left-handed quark doublets, and left-handed charge lepton doublets. While for the usual isospin singlet, now they are unified into a SU2 right doublet. So here is the U right D right, which is a doublet under SU2R. And for the charge lepton, this is ER, which is unified with a new R. And what defines minimal is a Higgs sector, which has a bi-doublet, namely doublet under the first SU2, and it is also a doublet under the second SU2, and a left-handed triplet, delta L, and also a right-handed triplet, delta R. So here are our three Higgses. So with these three Higgses, which has four neutral components, in general, we would have four complex phases. But as it turns out, the Lagrangian of this model is invariant under the following unitary transformations. One corresponds to a left-handed rotation, which is UL, and the other is a right-handed rotation, UR. While various fields transform in the following way under this unitary transformation, so basically the left-handed fermions get rotated by UL, while the right-handed fermions get rotated by UR, and various Higgs fields transform accordingly. All right. So basically, the bidoublet transform as UR phi UL dagger, and delta L only get affected by UL, and same for delta R. So with this transformation, the Lagrange, under this transformation, the Lagrangian is invariant. And the VEF, various VEF, meaning kappa, kappa prime, which are the two neutral components in the bidoublets, and VL and VR, which are the neutral components in the triplets, they transform accordingly. So with this unitary transformation, we can just rotate away two of the four complex faces. And the model only has two intrinsic, meaning physical faces. One we choose to be one, which is associated with kappa prime, namely a relative phase between these two neutral components in the bidoublets, and the relative phase between the two triplets. And as it turns out, alpha L dominantly contribute to all lepton CP violation.
And that's what you need. Right?
That's what we need to make the connection.
Okay, so is there going to be a connection between the minimal size of VL and whether things are successful?
You mean writing VL in terms of VR?
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, that a non-zero value for VL, of course, means that you have a possible problem with precision electrical.
Right, but I mean, the VL, the size of VL we need is only 0.1 electron volt, right?
That's what I'm asking. Okay.
Right, and that's what's said by neutrino masses.
Okay.
So there's no problem with electron weak precision. But I mean, standard model also has problem at the loop level, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so also I should mention alpha kappa prime, because the bidoublet is the only field that couple to quarks. This is the only phase that account for OCP violation in quark sector. So I think I should speed up. Okay, so what this means is all the three phases in the M&S matrix is functions of this fundamental phase alpha L. And so in neutrino oscillation, where the CP violation effect is parameterized by the Yotsko, this quantity is proportional to sine alpha L. While in neutrinoless double beta decay, this appears through alpha 3-1 and alpha 2-1. And once again, these two phases are functions of alpha L. In the third place, CP violation enter is leptogenesis. So here we have the type 2 leptogenesis due to the presence of the triplet Higgs. So there are two ways to implement where leptogenesis can occur. One is to produce the asymmetry through the decay of the lightest right-handed neutrino through the lepton doublets and the conjugate Higgs. This is just like the standard scenario. The other case is through the decay of the triple Higgs into dileptons. And of course, their asymmetry, I mean, the amount of symmetry is characterized by the ratio of the difference to the sum of these decay rates of the conjugate processes. So which one of these two processes dominate depends upon whether the lightest right-handed neutrino is lighter or heavier compared to the triple Higgs. All right? Well, another scenario is that the lightest right-handed neutrino is lighter compared to the triple Higgs, because basically they get their masses through the coupling to the triple Higgs. The N1 decay would dominate. So we get back to the usual case, but not quite. There are new contributions. So if N1 dominates, we have the usual diagrams, which are the type 1 contribution. Right, so this is the same as what we had before. But in this case, since CP occur spontaneously, this contribution vanish. All right? So in addition to these two standard diagrams, there's also a contribution from this new diagram, which involve a triple Higgs. And the asymmetry in this case is proportional to the type 2 Cesol mass term, which is, and this total asymmetry is proportional to psi alpha L. So you mentioned this conclusion is independent of our choice of these unitary transformations. The usual standard diagram always vanishes if CP violation occurs spontaneously in this model. So what's plotted here, I think this is the more interesting plot, is the amount of lepton number symmetry versus the Yaskal invariant. And as you can see, in the large JCP region, there is a large, very strong correlation between the two observables. But unfortunately, just to analyze it numerically, as it turns out, to get sufficient amount of baryonic asymmetry, the required JCP is only of the order of 10 to the power minus 5, which is too small to be observed experimentally. All right, so I skip that. So she mentioned there are also other attempts along the similar line, trying to account for OCP violation, including strong CP, and also quark CP violation by introducing some vectorial like a quark and singular scalar fields, where the singular scalar fields is a source, I mean, whose VEF is a source of OCP violation. And there's also extension to SO10 along this line. But in all of these models, it is not as attractive because, remember, in minimal Lebrun model, that's the fact that we have only two fundamental phases, that's due to the global symmetry structure of the model. While here, these are just pure assumptions. So say only S acquire a complex wave, this is not protected by any symmetry, but just a ad hoc assumption. Okay, so in the remaining 5 minutes, I'll just talk about the tri-bimaximal neutrino mixing, which, as I mentioned, is of this very special form, and it predicts exactly vanishing theta 1-3. So one question is whether leptogenesis is possible in this framework. So there was an earlier question whether this tri-bimaximal mixing can come from some underlying symmetry, and this actually is most of the model building efforts in the past few years. So this mixing can arise from a permutation group S3, or there is also a model based on Z7 cross Z3, a most attractive one is this tetrahedral group A4, where the tri-bimaximal mixing results from purely group theory. There's no adjustable parameter. But the problem there is there's no CKM mixing. So what we consider instead is the double covering of this A4 group, which can give rise to both the CKM and also the tri-bimaximal neutrino mixing. Okay, so just to show you, there have been many efforts and to use various finite groups which correspond to the 5 elements. All right. So just look at this general neutrino mass matrix. In order to get the maximal atmospheric mixing and theta 1-3, so this result can come from this matrix with this. Let's see, this is 1, 2, and 1, 3 elements to be equal, and 2, 2, 2, 3 equal, elements to be equal. So in this case, even though we have this very nice prediction, the solar mixing angle is not fixed. Okay? So a realization of neutrino mass matrix in this form, this can come from S3, D4, or Newton symmetry. However, if we have the sum rule, namely A plus B, is equal to C plus D, then the solar mixing angle can be fixed, where tangent squared theta 1-2 is fixed to be 1/2. And this gives rise to exactly the tri-bimaximal mixing pattern. And this relation can arise through an A4 symmetry, or this double covering of A4, or this Z3 cross Z7 symmetry. So just to go through very quickly, to see how this arises, this is actually really neat. So what is A4 group? So A4 group describes the even permutations of 4 objects. So basically, it has 2 generators which describe the reordering of 1, 2, 3, 4 into 4, 6, 2, 1. And the other generator describes the reordering of 1, 2, 3, 4 into 2, 3, 1, 4. And geometrically, basically, all the group elements describe the rotations which leave the tetrahedron invariant. This can also come from, or before compactification, from 6D down to 4D on a T2 mod Z2 OB4. So what's nice about this group is it has, so a property of this group is it has four inequivalent representations. It has three inequivalent singlets, one 1 prime, one double prime, and a triplet. All right? And to get tri-bimaximal mixing, what's required is to unify the three families of lepton doublets into a triplet and assigning the right-handed charged leptons, three families of right-handed charged leptons into the three singlets, 1, 1 prime, and 1 double prime. So an isolation mentioned, so this is just what I said, right? And the standard model Higgs is a singlet under this group, either A4 or double covering of A4, which we denoted as BT. So the operator that gives rise to neutrino masses is this usual Weinberg dimension 5 operator, HHLL. And since L, which now describes this triplet under A4, is a S3. So basically, the product rule is, there's no chop. Anyway, it's 3 cross 3 equals to 3 plus 3 plus 1 plus 1 prime plus 1 double prime. All right, so to get a gauge invariant mass term for the neutrinos, we can either couple the triplet components of these products, LL, to a triplet Higgs, which acquire VEV along this direction, which break this group DT down to a subgroup that is generated by, anyway, some smaller subgroup, or the singlet components in this products to a pure singlet eta. All right, so once we do that, the contribution of this triplet is along the diagonal elements, it contributes a relative factor of 2, which are the Clebsch-Golden coefficient, and a relative factor of -1. Once again, this is Clebsch-Golden coefficient. And everything is proportional to the VEV of this triplet field. So there's only one component, I mean, only one parameter meaning the VEV of this triplet. And this 2 and -1 are just Clebsch-Golden coefficients, which are calculable. While the singlet contribution, eta, basically, it contributes only to the 1-1, 2-3, and 3-2 components. And the clashes is R1 for all the three components and 0 everywhere else. All right? So this is the resulting neutrino mass matrix. So what's special about it is that this is form diagonalizable. What that means is no matter what the value of KC0 and U are, this mass matrix is always diagonalized by this tri-bimaximal mixing matrix. And this is really robust. All right, so basically, neutrino mixing just come from Clebsch-Golden coefficients. And nothing you can change, no parameters you can tune to change this prediction. And of course, the three mass eigenvalues would depend on the VEV. And since all the three mass eigenvalues are determined by only two parameters, this leads to a sum rule among the three masses. And as you can see, the sum rule will be M1 minus M3 equals to 2M2. Okay, so of course, for the charged lepton sector, I don't have time to go through, but just like to mention, in this very simple implementation, it is diagonal, and that's so all the charged lepton masses are due to this another triplet Higgs, which acquire a VEV, which break the symmetry along a different direction. And this gives rise to a diagonal charged lepton mass matrix. So in this simple implementation, the neutrino mixing is exactly tri-bimaximal. But the problem with A4 is there's no quark mixing. And once we have the double covering of A4, which has three additional double representations, we can account for all the quark mixing. And there's actually a realization based on Gauss symmetry, which we proposed very recently. And I should mention, in this Gauss realization, we also obtain a new quark lepton complementary sum rule, meaning a sum rule between the solar mixing angle, the solar mixing angle and the Kirby-Bell angle, and this relation involves the Dirac leptonic CP phase. And also we have a prediction, now we have a correction, due to the fact that we want to account for realistic quark masses, meaning the Jagiellonian relation at the gas scale. This leads to a prediction for theta 1-3, which once again is related to the size of the Kirby-Bell angle.
You have a neutrino mass sum rule again?
Yes, and I'm going to show you. So, where am I? Right, so here is the sum rule. Right, so this is the sum rule, M1 minus M3 equals to 2M2. And generally, there could be Majorana phases. So the bottom line is this: what this sum rule leads to is the following. Once I put in the most general case with the Majorana phase, then the delta M solar square is equal to minus 9 cosine 0 square, which is the real part of the back of this triplet, plus a half of delta M atmospheric square. And since we know delta M solar square has to be positive to have matter effects, and since we know cosine 0 is positive, and therefore the first term is negative, so what this predicts is a normal hierarchical mass pattern, because in order to satisfy this sum rule, delta M atmospheric square has to be positive. So in this model, normal hierarchy is predicted. So the generic prediction of this type of model is the following. So here, what's plotted here is, on the left, is a sum of the three epsilon masses of the neutrinos, which is of the order of 0.1 electron volts up to 0.2 electron volts. And the x-axis is the Majorana phase. Well, the plot on the right, so this blue band is a prediction of the lightest effective neutrino mass, while this gray region is a prediction for the matrix element of neutrinoless double beta decay. So now get back to the question earlier. This is a region, so this is roughly 0.01 to 0.08 electron volt, which is much higher compared to the usual prediction from GAP model, which has normal hierarchy. So this is basically the region coming from this A4, this tetrahedron group, which has a much higher prediction for the neutrinoless double beta decay matrix element.
So I'm still trying to absorb. The red is your tetrahedral?
The red is, okay, so let me go slowly. So the green here is a prediction for general inverted hierarchy models. All right? And the red is the normal hierarchy case. The most general case.
Okay, where is your tetrahedral?
Tetrahedral is roughly right here.
Oh, so you're really pointing to that.
It is, right, because I mean that you can read just by comparing this plot, right?
Time, yes, I could.
Right, so basically, remember this is a log scale.
Yeah.
Not log scale. I mean, this is written in powers of. Right, so this really the range. Due to the sum rule, I mean, this is basically just range between.
So you're in the normal hierarchy region, as you've already said.
Yes, but it is very close to near the degenerate spectrum. You mean?
I suppose you're right at that border where
it's
delta.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Not testable. It's below the boundary.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
All you know is that.
Right.
Okay. I got you. All right. Good.
Okay. So get back to lithogenesis in this particular case. So what has been shown earlier by Jenkins and also Manohar is that in the exact trimaximal mixing case, theta 1-3 is 0, which means the JCP is 0. So CP violation can only occur through the Majorana phases. But But due to the fact that this combination is always real in this particular model, and that's related to the fact that there's no right-handed mixing, there's no lipogenesis possible, even when one includes the flavor effects. All right? So of course, they claim there could be correction to trimaximal mixing pattern, and one way to get it is in this SU5 model I show, where all the corrections can be related to Tabibbo angle. And what this group has found is sufficient amount of leptogenesis can occur. And also, this is my postdoc, Yu. He showed earlier with collaborator with type 2 CISO contribution with a SU3 realization of trimaximal mixing, even in the exact trimaximal limit. There is non-vanishing asymmetry due to the Maya runoff phase, phi 1. So this is the case. So what this means is even in the absence of theta 1-3, one can still get the leptogenesis through the Maya runoff phase. All right, so I think I'll skip this. So to conclude, leptogenesis, of course, is one of the most promising mechanisms for generating baryon asymmetry in the universe. And connection between leptogenesis and low-energy CP violation generally does not exist in a model-independent way. However, this statement is weakened when flavor effects are included. So in the second part of my talk, I show you various ways where, based on models for neutrino masses, where the number of parameters are reduced, which then allowing the connection between leptogenesis and neutrino oscillation. This model include those based on 2 cross 3 CISO or models with spontaneous CP violation. And I also discussed this very interesting topic of getting trimaximal neutrino mixing using the finite group family symmetry. In that case, it has been shown with higher order corrections, it is possible to get a sufficient amount of leptogenesis, and I think I'll stop here. Thank you.
Any questions? Sorry, I interrupted you during your talk.
That's good.
So you showed up briefly a plot of total neutrino mass.
Right. This one?
Yeah. So, given enough mass, the sum of the neutrinos, the spectrum of dark matter will be measurably affected, observationally testable. And for all values of cosine delta looking at your left upper left plot, one should be able to get at least a 5 sigma detection of that.
I see. That's interesting. Right.
What's the current?
The current limit is right at the very top. That is to say, total neutrino sum mass has to be less than about 0.2 to 0.3. That's set by the Sloan Digital Sky Survey.
Right.
Let's thank Chen again.
Thank you.
I'll read your talk.
So we'll
post them on the website.
Sure. Okay.